Hello, everybody, and welcome in to another special podcast right here on Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zaglul, and on today's show, we're welcoming in NBA royalty. Today's special guest is one of the 50 greatest players in NBA history. We're going to talk with him today about his amazing basketball career, some NBA Finals news and predictions, and so much more. So sit tight. So glad you're joining us today. This should be a very fun interview. Before we get started today, make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Instagram at JohnZax, Twitter at JohnZSports, and LinkedIn at JohnZaglul. Today's show is brought to you by Moochie World, where inspiration meets creation. Call 708-247-2100 to book parties, paint your own pottery, and have art projects for adults and children. Moochie World, creativity at its finest. And by the Windy City Thunderbolts. Celebrate the team's 20th anniversary season by purchasing tickets right now. Call 708-489-2255 for your chance to be a part of history this summer in Crestwood. It's now time for our special guest. He began his NBA career in 1965 with the San Francisco Warriors, averaging 25.7 points per game en route to an All-Star selection. After a four-year stint in the ABA, he returned to the Warriors, helping them win the 1975 NBA Finals while being named Finals MVP. Just 12 years later, he became a member of the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. And in 1996, he was named one of the 50 greatest players in NBA history. Please welcome basketball legend Rick Barry to the show. Rick, how are you doing today? Thank you for being here on the show.
Well, a pleasure to be there. Happy to talk to you and your listeners. Anybody that's a sports fan, especially basketball, is someone that I certainly appreciate. And, yeah, it's fun. And if I was doing any better, I'd be making a comeback in the NBA, and I'd play for the freaking average salary, which is a lot more than I ever made.
Well, Rick, to start today, let's take a look at what has been an entertaining NBA Finals series so far. Right now, it's all knotted up at one game apiece, Game 3 coming tonight in the Bay Area. Now, granted, it's early in the series, only two games have been played, but what sticks out to you about this matchup so far?
Well, the fact that the Warriors are playing like it's like a mash unit. I think, so many injuries and things that they've had to overcome, it's pretty remarkable, actually, that they're 1-1 and were able to get a victory in game number two, if you look at it. And so before the game, somebody said to you, okay, well, I think the Warriors are going to win, but Steph Curry's not going to score a point in the fourth quarter. Klay Thompson's not going to be in the game. Looney's going to be on the bench with a freaking broken collarbone or whatever the hell he is. And you would have said there's no chance in the world that they're going to win. It was a remarkable, remarkable victory, epitomizing what the game of basketball is all about. How often do you ever see a team for an entire half, every basket that they made was off an assist? When does that happen today? Because there's so much of the one-on-one stuff that goes on. It was a joy to behold to watch what they were able to accomplish.
And remember, Kevin Durant's also been out because he's been out now for 8 straight games, with tonight being game number 8. What are your thoughts on Durant being hurt? And also, since the Warriors are performing so well without him, do you think that undermines Kevin Durant's performance this year and maybe makes him a bit more expendable come free agency after the year?
No, not really. I mean, they're just a much better basketball team when he's there, when he's playing the Warriors style of basketball. What happens is that he's so great that they got caught up a little bit in the other series with giving him the ball with like 18, 15 seconds of the shot clock, and he's just doing his own thing. That's not Warriors basketball at its finest. That's not when they're at their best. They're at their best when they're passing, moving, cutting, just like you saw in what they've done so far in this series, playing that brand of basketball. And they could do like what the Bulls did. If you remember the Bulls, right? So the Bulls, obviously, they would run the triangle offense. And then with 5 seconds to go, if nothing happened, Michael had it, and he'd find a way to get a shot or do something. They could do the same thing with a guy like KD, but you don't need to give him the ball early and just get stagnant and stand around. Let's see if we can get one of our easy baskets, a pass for a dunk, some other opportunity that's there, before we worry about going one-on-one with one of our great players.
And do you think that that style of basketball, the triangle offense per se, or just passing the ball and scoring, is becoming obsolete in the NBA? Do you like that idea? Because it seems like right now, as you mentioned, one-on-one is the name of the game. You know, three-point shooting, finding ways to be open instead of passing to get the shot or passing to get the efficient basket. Do you think that that's a problem in the NBA today?
Well, it was a big problem, I think. I think a great many teams got caught up in the one-on-one stuff. But if you notice, a lot more passing is going on with teams now. I mean, the league is like a copycat league. If somebody's successful doing something, people want to try to copy it. Well, they're starting to do that. A lot of the games you watch, you see teams that, I mean, even Cleveland a few times, because they were, I mean, one time when I was charting the game, writing for the San Francisco Examiner, when they were having all their playoff series with the Warriors, they came down the time, 49 times they came down, 49 times. And no passes or one pass. That was it. I mean, it's unbelievable. And so then you see them later. All of a sudden, there's three, four, five passes. They're making the type of plays that you need to make. You know, and passing the ball is one thing. But it's another thing when you're actually running off of people and you're making the defense have to make decisions. My father, who was a semi-pro player and coach, taught me so much about the game and laid the foundation for me. He said, son, the more decisions you force the defense to make, the more the likelihood they're going to make a mistake. And if you have intelligent players who know how to play the game, who played unselfishly, you capitalize on those mistakes. That's what the Warriors did in the second half of the game against Toronto and enabled them to be able to win, even with all of the adversity that they were faced with all of the players with the injuries they had.
NBA legend Rick Barry here on Sports Talk Chicago. And Rick, speaking of the Raptors for a moment, they've received some clutch performances courtesy of Kawhi Leonard. And just to throw some numbers at you, he's been averaging 31 points and 9 rebounds per game throughout the playoffs. How much has he meant to the Raptors being where they are today in the NBA Finals in a tie series against the Warriors?
Well, obviously, he's a critical element. Without him, they wouldn't even be there. There's no doubt about that. And I love him because he shows up every day, and he's not a guy that tries to bring attention to himself. He just goes about his business and gets the job done. And I love the way that he plays. And, you know, the thing is that everybody talks about defense wins championships. Yeah, well, defense only wins championships if your offense can score. You know? I mean, that's what happened to Toronto. I was just talking to my old teammate Clifford Ray before we got on the call here, and we both said, he said, yeah, but if they had made some shots, I mean, they went through a stretch there where they couldn't put it in the ocean, and it killed them. I mean, if they had made some shots, they could conceivably have won that basketball game, but they just shot the ball poorly. So it doesn't matter how good your defense is, you still have to put points on the board to win.
Who do you see winning this series at this point? Because right now, obviously, tied 1-1, game 3 tonight, and there have been bright moments for both teams at this point. Who do you see winning, the Warriors or the Raptors, if you had to pick today?
Well, I don't know, because there's so many elements that you just don't know what's going to happen. Other people are going to have to step up. The Warriors have the injuries. Is Clay going to play? I heard that possibly that Durant may play tonight. I don't know. I honestly and truly do not know. And that's the beauty of sports, is that you can't look at paper. You can't do your evaluation. You still have to play the game. I mean, nobody would have picked the Warriors to win under the circumstances that exist that we just talked about earlier in game number 2 on the road and come up with a victory. So it's going to be fun to see what happens. But this game is the next two games for the Warriors are every bit as critical as game number 2 was up there, because they negate getting the home court advantage back, because they have to win both games in order to have control of the series. So tonight's game is a critical game for them. And if they win this one, then the next game's a critical game because they have to try to take control of the series and take care of business at home. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens tonight. I'll actually be at game on Friday. I'm hoping I go there and the Warriors are going to be up 3 to, you know, be up in that series 2-1 and take total control of the series. But I don't know. I mean, I never would bet a plunk nickel. Listen, I know firsthand. Okay, I was on a team that wasn't even supposed to. It was like the biggest mismatch in the history of the NBA Finals, playing against the Washington Bullets. You know, it's going to be a sweep, and we swept them. So it doesn't get any more dramatic than that. So I know firsthand what can happen and how you can't evaluate and analyze a game and think you're going to come up with the answer to what's going to happen.
You know, speaking of that team that you were on, you mentioned how you guys were supposed to get swept by the Bullets at the time in the 1975 NBA Finals. You ended up sweeping them. What went right for you guys during that series, and how did you execute that sweep? I mean, you came in, as you mentioned, as the underdog. I believe the Bullets had won 18 or 19 more games in the regular season than you guys, and you come in, you sweep them in 4 games, game over, you win the NBA Finals. What happened during that series?
Well, we just played good basketball, and people over-evaluated the fact that we lost to them in our regular season series when we played them. But, I mean, one of the games I didn't play well, I didn't shoot well, and they're, you know, saying that Mike Rudin could guard me. I'm saying, what, are you kidding me? I mean, I'm taller than him, faster than him. I mean, I had a bad game shooting, which happens. Another game I probably shouldn't have played because I got banged up and stuff, and I probably shouldn't have played. And so we weren't concerned about that. I mean, we had confidence in ourselves that we could go out and play. And I think Washington was a little overconfident, even to the point of the fact that they decided decided, because we didn't have an arena, we had an arena issue, they could have wound up, you know, doing something where they decided that, yeah, they were willing to play the first game at home, go back and play two games at our place. Well, that backfired on them, didn't it? Yeah, when they lost that first game at home, they come to our place, and then we beat them twice at our place. So they were so overconfident that they were willing to accept that. Why would you want to give up that opportunity to have the first two games at your place? I couldn't figure that one out, and they sure paid a price for it.
And ironically enough, the very next season, you helped lead the Warriors to a 59-win season. You guys had the most wins in the NBA, but you were upset in the Western Conference Finals by the Phoenix Suns. So how did it feel for you to go from pulling off an upset one year to experiencing a loss as a favorite the next?
It was like a nightmare, which still exists today. I still can remember all the plays that happened there. I mean, I probably remember those things more so than the victories that we had. You know, that was ridiculous. They changed the rule in basketball as a result of what happened in that Phoenix series. We had an opportunity to win the game at Phoenix, okay, and we could have taken control of the series. Instead, we wound up losing Game 7 at home, which shows you home court advantage isn't always the greatest thing in the world. I hate the fact that we did that, because we could have been back-to-back champions, which hadn't happened forever in the NBA. And so we called. It was a situation where they were going to throw the ball into me. They scored. We were up 2, I believe, or 1, and then I was running to go get the ball. They would have had a foul because we were down in the last part of the game. And so, instead, there was a timeout got called for us. So we go to the sidelines, the plays, to get it into me, because they're going to have to foul anyway. So what happened is, and to his credit, John McLeod came up with the strategy that, you know, when they throw it in, just grab it and intentionally foul the guy out of bounds, one of my teammates, which they did. And so he wound up missing the free throw. They came down, they make a shot, and they wound up going ahead, and we wound up losing the close game in Phoenix, where we could have won if I would have made my free throws, which I had all the confidence in the world I could have done that. But they put the rule in that in the last 2 minutes, you cannot intentionally foul off the ball.
How much does that tear you up to this day to still have that rule change be in place, and what happened there in that series?
Well, I was just extremely disappointed. I played to try to win. I wanted to have a chance to win the title back-to-back, and that's what you play for. You don't play for individual awards and honors. I mean, to this day, it's one of the biggest disappointments in my career. It probably ranks right up there with not, you know, getting a chance to play for the United States and represent us in the Olympics, because they had a quota system back then, and I didn't make it and didn't play in the Olympics. And so that series there, and then also the series in 67 when we played against the 76ers, one of the great teams ever. We had two pick-and-roll plays involving Nate Thurman, God rest his soul, my dear Hall of Fame teammate and top 50 player, with Will Chamberlain involved, and both of those plays went Philadelphia's way, and they wound up winning in 6 games. If those two plays, which are at the end of games, gone our way, we would have won in 6 games. So those are the 3 things in my career, basketball-wise, that, you know, stand up there as the biggest disappointments.
You know, speaking of free throws, and I want to bring this back now to today's game, it seems like right now that lots of players are discounting their free throws. I mean, LeBron James, for example, this year posted a free throw percentage of 66.5%. That was a career low. Now, you, of course, were one of the greatest free throw shooters of all time, and heck, you were one of the greatest players of all time. What do you think about the way in which the league is going?
Well, I think the league is going great as far as, you know, the expansion that they've had, as far as internationally, as far as the recognition that the basketball is getting at the worldwide sport. The popularity is off the charts. They're doing a great job. Adam Silver's doing a great job. But as far as the game itself goes, I mean, I've always been a proponent of making your free throws. It's the only part of the game where no one's trying to prevent you from doing what you're doing. And I just don't understand how players can live with themselves without trying anything at all, to get to be a better free throw shooter. Because it's a constant, same size ball, same size basket, same distance every single time. Nobody stopped you. Nobody tried to stop you from doing it. How do you live with yourself? I mean, that's been LeBron James' Achilles heel. He's never been an 80% free throw shooter. And if you become, he should be 80%. If you're not an 80% free throw shooter, you're not a good free throw shooter. It's that simple. That's being able to miss one out of every 5 that you take, for heaven's sake. I mean, and I took great pride in that. It's the only part of the game you can be totally selfish and only worry about yourself, and you help your team, and you don't hurt your team. I mean, I actually changed my technique. My last 6 years, I wish I had been smart enough to change it earlier. I shot over 92% my last 6 years. My last 2 years, I shot over 94%. In fact, Andre Drummond from the Pistons a few seasons ago missed more free throws in one game than I missed in my entire last 2 seasons.
Oh, my goodness. Well, what was the change in technique then for you in the last 6 years of your career?
I took the wrist. I just took the wrist out of my shot when I did it the way my father taught me, and I made it a very simple shot that was very easy to repeat, and it just eliminated a lot of the mistakes.
Well, following now your second stint with Golden State, going back to your playing career, and a two-year stretch with Houston, you had decided to call it a career in 1980. How difficult was it for you to walk away from the game, and when you did retire, did you ever anticipate the numerous accolades that you would end up receiving?
No, and I never worried about that stuff. I just played the game. It was difficult to leave. I still felt I could have played more, but to show you the difference, the league changed the rules from number of players. They went from 12 active players to 11. They didn't have any more than that, and they cut the rosters. Otherwise, I would have gone to play with the Boston Celtics that year.
And is that a regret that you have for your career? Because obviously the Celtics, a storied organization, won many championships. Do you feel that maybe you could have won another championship in Boston had the rule not been changed?
Of course. I mean, I would have been back and playing with Larry Bird and Kevin McHale and Robert Favre. Come on, yeah, of course. I could have been really helped up because I had my knee scoped that summer, and it's the best I felt in 10 years and never played again. So, yeah, I definitely could have helped them. There's no question about it. But, hey, it didn't happen, and I don't live in the past. I worry about taking care of today and then do the best I can, whatever shows up tomorrow.
Well, fortunately enough, you're still involved with basketball today as you're now the head coach of the Ball Hogs, a Big Three-affiliated franchise. Now, you had gone 1-7 last season. You finished near the bottom of the league. What are your expectations for this upcoming season in the Big Three?
Well, I think we won more than one game last year. But the thing is that we just have to get players who are going to play properly and shoot it properly. Our thing is we played great in the first half. We were like Groundhog Day. I mean, it was the same thing over and over again. We played great, have a lead, and be terrific in the first half, and all of a sudden we forgot what we did in the second half, and we just didn't shoot well, didn't play well, and we wind up losing tons of games in the second half. But that's why they have two halves to the game. You got to play well in both of them. So hopefully we'll do a little better this year. I think we got some nice players and additions to our team, and I'm looking forward to it. And I think it's been tremendously successful, and I'm hoping that we do a little better because no matter what I'm doing, whatever it is, I don't like losing.
So, Rick, as we get near the end of today's interview, I have a two-part question for you that involves your playing career. Now, first, I want to know, who was the toughest player that you had to defend on the court? And secondly, who was the best teammate that you had ever played with?
Well, they were all the tough to guard. Trying to guard people with players are all great players. They were tough. I had the biggest problem if I got switched off and had to guard a big guy who would post me up. I wasn't the biggest and strongest person in the world, so... You know, a guy that posted up was the one that probably caused me the most problems. I didn't have that much difficulty outside because I was a lot quicker than a lot of guys that I had to guard, so it wasn't a situation where they were going to go by me like I wasn't there. So big guys was the biggest problem. And then as far as the greatest player I ever played with, I played with Nate Thurman. Nate Thurman was one of the top 50 players of all time. So from the standpoint of greatness, Nate would be the greatest player I play with on my team. Of course, I had the good fortune of playing with so many great players in all-star games. It was, you know, such a joy to do that. But the most fun player for me, and the one who's like my dear friend, we're like brothers, is Clifford Ray, who was with the Bulls and, of course, got traded to us. You guys got Nate Thurman, and it turned out to be the best thing that the Warriors had ever done. It's hard to believe that you can trade off a great player like Nate Thurman and wind up becoming a better team. It wasn't because Clifford was better than Nate. It's just the chemistry that he brought to the team and his attitude and the way he approached things. And, you know, to this day, we're dear friends. As I said, I just talked to him before I was talking to you and trying to plan our summer fishing trip up to Alaska. And we spend a lot of time together. I'm like, it's so funny because we go out. He's got a son who's going to be a pretty darn good player for SMU next year. Ever check him out. And my son, here's my son, a little towhead, you know, white kid, and Everett, you know, a black kid, and we're out, and Everett's calling me Uncle Rick, and my son's calling him Uncle Clifford, and people are looking like, what is that? You know, so it's a pretty cool relationship that we have. Hey, let me get a quick plug in, because I have to run. For all your listeners, this is a great opportunity. Just go to TLC, all small letters, TLC24.net, TLC24.net. Sign up. You can get a card for travel, $2,000 worth of value for a VIP travel card at the Travel Lifestyle Club. No obligation whatsoever, no cost to you. It'll be cheaper than going online to the other sites that are there, travel for hotels and resorts worldwide. Use it at your leisure and enjoy it. Get the savings and, you know, my gift to you, TLC24.net.
Well, Rick, thank you so much for being here on the show today. Always a pleasure to have you on talking some basketball, and you're always welcome back. Hope to have you on again soon.
Thank you. God bless you and your listeners. Bye-bye.
What an honor it was to welcome Rick Barry onto the show today as we talked with him about the NBA Finals, the direction of the game today, and his storied basketball career. What I love about Rick is that he's always very candid, not afraid to hold back and give some hard-hitting opinions on certain subjects. He certainly did that today when we talked about the way the game is going, including a diss at LeBron James and his free throw shooting. Very interesting and always entertaining to have Rick Barry on the show. I'm so glad that you decided to join us along for the ride today. Before we finish up now, just a few quick announcements. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Instagram at JohnZags, Twitter at JohnZSports, and LinkedIn at JohnZagluel. Also, if you'd like to become a subscriber to the website, simply type in your email on the subscription box of the site, click yes on the confirmation email, and from there, you'll be subscribed. You'll receive every new podcast and article directly to your email. And remember, Sports Talk Chicago is now on iTunes and Google Play. Simply search Sports Talk Chicago and every podcast from the 2018-19 calendar year is now available. Feel free to leave us a 5-star rating and or write a review. Your support is greatly appreciated. And finally, if you enjoyed today's podcast, make sure to check out my new radio show every Tuesday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on 88.5 WHPK-FM Chicago. You'll still hear my same hard-hitting Chicago sports opinions, plus we'll cover national sports news, have special segments, and of course, welcome very special guests to each and every show. Again, that's every Tuesday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on 88.5 WHPK-FM Chicago. Thank you again for listening in to today's show, and have a great day.